I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. And it is a fine morning here in the St. Chad studio, which is to be expected. Across from me is Father Garrett Hoffman. Wow. I don't know. Scratch that one. Across from me is Father Garrett Burns.
How we doing?
And Father Drew Hoffman.
What's up?
I'm just so excited to be in the St. Chad studio. I can't think straight is what's going on.
That really made me laugh.
I mean, it's just, he is been due for some time to be properly honored on this side of the ocean and in this room and in this podcast. So
it felt extra bro in here this morning.
No, as it should.
I can't wait till St. Brad's feast day comes up and Brad and Chad, just the broiest cathedral we could make.
Apparently Chad has become like a name for Saturday Night Live skits for a certain sort of character. Oh, yeah. I've been told. I haven't seen these, but yeah, I don't even know if it's good or bad, but it's become like
not Karen. It's good.
Usually yeah. It's not a compliment.
Right. Taken on the annotation like Karen of it yeah. means something, but he's a tremendous saint. And just so you know, Saint or Chad means warlike. So,
wow. That's pretty cool. So, yeah, what's Garrett mean?
Like a spear bearer or something.
Is that
like
true?
That. Yeah, I think so.
That's kind of cool.
I think you made that up. Yeah. I don't believe it. You were just trying to go along with
this
warlike.
This is the manliest studio.
Thank you, St. Chad. Yeah. I'm telling you, someday I'm going to get over there. Now, when we first started this podcast, one of the questions we discussed, I don't know if you guys remembered, but we talked about how we would address one another while recording. Because typically, priests, if they're in a public setting and talking to another priest or referring to him, they'll use the title Father, you know, Father Nick, Father so-and-so. But unsurprisingly, when we're among ourselves, we don't usually call each other Father. We just use first names. Some priests do, but that's the rarity. And this particular medium, it is for public consumption, but it's also just kind of a conversation among the three of us. And so that's why there was discussion whether we use the name Father or not. In fact, I think in one of the first runs, someone told me it was distracting that we didn't refer to each other as Father. I just called you Drew or Garrett and whatnot. But that aside, I've never really asked this of other priests, but I guess I've always been kind of curious how I work it out in my own life is, do you get called Father? Do they use it by family and friends? And I'm talking about like people that have known you well before you ever went into seminary. So maybe we just started off easy family. Mom, dad, brothers and sisters. Do any of them call you Father, at least in private or even in public? I don't know.
No, but sometimes my nephews will. A lot of times my nephews will. And I think that's more of just they're used to us being talked about when we're not there. And so, and they just hear Father Devin, Father Garrett. And so even when it's just the family at home, they'll even call us that a lot of times.
It's a little different because both of the uncles in the house are priests.
True.
So I would imagine that.
So there is no uncle because both the boys in the family are, are fathers. So they don't even know the term uncle.
Right. They have no idea what that is. No, I'm just kidding.
No. Not when I'm at home. With an exception, my sister, when she's being sarcastic, will say Father. Or not so much sarcastic as like, thanks, Father. Or thanks a lot, Father.
I can see Sarah doing that.
Yeah. And so when she's sarcastic and joking around, she'll call me Father. But my parents never would when we're in a private setting. In a public setting, they're really good about referring to me as Father Drew and things like that. Not that they necessarily need to, but they try to make a... But my family, no. I'd say my extended family is maybe more mixed. Aunts and uncles and things like that, probably a little more mixed. Sometimes they call me Father, sometimes they wouldn't. And so I wouldn't say there's a super strict role on that. My cousins, I think, are also in the sarcastic train when they're being, thanks a lot, Father. Yeah, great job, Father.
Do you think you'll have your niece or nephew call you?
I won't have them, but I think they will. I don't know. I never really thought about that. Yeah. But I think like if it's uncle or if it's, I think they probably will say Father. I don't know though.
All my
nieces, yeah.
All my nieces and nephews call me uncle.
Okay.
I think my brother asked me like, when, well, do you want him to call you father? Uncles. Plenty of people call me father. These are the only people that are going to call me uncle. And so I was all for that. And like, what, you know, if I was ever assigned to the parish where you were at, and it was in the back of the church, the kids might have to learn to differentiate so they don't confuse the other kids. Yeah. But they all call me uncle. One of my uncles asked my mom when I was ordained. One of her brothers asked, "So are you gonna call him Father Chad?" And she's, "Absolutely not." My mother has never used that. My brothers don't use that. Similar to you, Drew, like the extended family out, it's a mix. And yeah. and same with like friends. Friends that have known me for a long time, there's a mix. With extended family, it's kind of funny. The ones that don't really practice the faith so much and that I'm not as close to call me Chad. And I'd probably be more comfortable if they called me father because, again, I'm not that personal with them.
Huh.
Whereas the other relatives who practice their faith, but I'm actually a lot closer to, and I'd probably be more comfortable with them calling me Chad, or always refer to me or more typically refer to me as Father Chad. I remember when I was first ordained, that piece felt a little weird. And I think I even said to a couple, you can just call me Chad, but because where they are at in their faith, and that's fine. They prefer calling me Father Chad, but that was kind of an adjustment for me when I was first ordained. And I honestly don't know if I liked it or not. And my likes don't necessarily figure into it, but especially in the beginning, now it doesn't make much difference to me. But in the beginning, I actually would have been more comfortable, would have just kept calling me Chad though, in the close family situations. Yeah, friends, I've got both. I was with my group of guy friends. We get together once a month, hang out around the fire, and we were talking the other night. And yeah, it's about half call me father, half just use my name. Either's fine with that group of people. I've got one particular friend, Travis Gear, who Travis only ever talks to me sarcastically. And so it's always father, but it's always, yeah, done in a very sarcastic manner.
Yeah, I think, remember you saying, I don't know if you heard it somewhere, but Drew, but call me as you met me, basically.
So somebody told me Archbishop Coakley told them that. I have that written down to say that Coakley, because he had been to Father and then maybe Monsignor. I don't know, remember if Coakley was a Monsignor and then Bishop and then Archbishop. He'd had some and Deacon before that and then Paul before that had so many changes. He kind of said, call me as you. And I don't know necessarily if that's even a true story. And I don't know if that's a great 100% rule, but I kind of like some St. Louis people still call me Deacon almost because they, not on purpose or anything, but that's how they've always known me. That's how for that year that we were friends, that's how they knew me or things like that. So when you had as many name changes as Paul Coakley has had, if that's a true story, that kind of makes some sense. And it harkens back to, we have a deep, long-standing relationship. I was a friend of yours when I was pastor at Resurrection, and so we have that closeness. Or when I was at KU, or when I was Bishop of Salina. So it harkens back to the depth of our relationship, actually.
I like that a lot, actually. That makes, you call me as you met me. I like that a lot, and it definitely seems to have more weight if we attribute it to Archbishop Coakley, whether it's true or not. So I'm going to go with that. He said
Lover of the pod, Archbishop Paul Coakley.
That's right. We keep asking him to come on, but so far he's just been too busy. I don't know why he doesn't want to drive up from Oklahoma City to sit down with us for 30 minutes.
He's building a massive shrine.
But yeah, call me as you met me. And I've heard that from a couple bishops talk about one of the difficulties they have is people don't call them father anymore and they miss that.
And like with Bishop Kemi, we're going to have him on soon. I'd be interested. How many people call him Carl in his whole life? Like, I don't know. Maybe there are, but
yeah.
Or even Bishop Carl, like his first name gets used in Eucharistic prayer every single day.
Isn't that funny?
But not in personal interactions. That's interesting.
In the liturgical functions, how we refer to him as Bishop Carl, but no one, I don't know any of Bishop that goes by their first name, Bishop Paul.
Bishop John in Dodge City usually does.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
There was a kid at Cathedral that I think is just from the Mass. And even in Spanish, this was at least Father Adam's tradition or whatever custom was to say Carl and not Carlos.
Yeah.
So you're talking in Spanish and you're like, Nuestro Obispo, Carl. So it just kind of like stands out. So there was just a dumb eighth grade kid. And I was like, oh yeah, the bishop's coming later. He goes, oh, you mean Carl? Like, yeah, I guess no one calls him that, but yeah.
I support that tradition. And liturgically, I think that's the right thing to do personally.
Oh, I absolutely
think it is. Because you would never do it the other way around. If we had a Hispanic bishop named Juan, I would never in the English Mass say Bishop John.
That's his name.
Yeah, it's Juan.
Now, Francis is a different thing because his name isn't Francis. It's the Italian. I mean, it can be, that's the whole point.
Yeah, exactly.
So to say Francisco in Spanish Mass is perfectly appropriate.
I
think with us too, the fact that like, Garen Clay and I, if people know one of us, they know all three of us. At KU, they know both of us. So it's a little different, I think, for our college friends, because it's not like if you say father, you don't know who you're talking about, because there's been a lot, there's a lot of the fathers that are around. And so I don't know. I think that's a little bit of an interesting thing. It's kind of cool that there's this friend group has like three people or four, even more, that are all priests in there. So you kind of have to be specific. So a Drew would maybe even be more helpful than just saying Father.
That's what I tell people when they say, do you want to go by Father Garrett or Father Burns? I said, well, there's less Father Garretts than there are Father Burns. So I'll that's go with fine. Father Garrett. That's,
there's so many Father Drews.
There are. It's the most popular in the diocese. Most, which is, and I've said this before, but there will never be a seminarian by the name of Chad. If he steps in, he's got to go by his middle name. And another diocese will go by his middle name. I am the only Father Chad, and I like that. It just makes, it's not confusing. How many times have I've literally been telling a story about a Father Drew and forget to clarify, and they think I'm talking about one of the other, other Father Drews. Or, you know, I will say something disparaging about you and they think I'm disparaging Father Hyman, which I would never do.
Never.
And they're shocked until I say, no, Father Drew Hoffman. They're like, oh, okay, I get it. Yeah. Sense. Yeah. I've heard that story. So
have you guys had the experience with a call me as you met me kind of thing? So when parishioners, they met you as Father, and then you develop more of a personal friendship, and then they start to call you by your first name. So I've had that happen a little bit, and that feels weird of like, we are friends and I just come over to your house in plain clothes and we just hang out and I'm totally myself. But like, I'm still, I don't know. You met me as a priest and you only know me as a priest. So it was weird to hear them say Garrett.
I've never really had that experience. I know exactly what you're talking about of people not really calling me Father that I know strictly in a ministerial standpoint, even if we're friends. I know exactly what you're saying, but I've never really had that experience, mostly because I deal with college kids who would never say Drew. I mean, they just would never say Drew. And so it's a little different perhaps, but
yeah, I would say, I don't know if I've had that experience except for a few rare occasions. And I agree with you, Garrett. It makes me a little uncomfortable. I don't prefer that. I know there are some priests who do, who will say, yep, you know, we're good friends. Just call me such and such. And that's cool if that's what they prefer. But like you said, Gare, well, you met me as Father. I'm kind of that. I've never corrected anyone. Yeah. I've never corrected any adult. There's, you know, sometimes a smart aleck kid hey, Chad, come here. No, you don't. Just like you wouldn't call your teacher in sixth grade by their first name. So we correct that. But, and I think there's only one time that I can remember where it kind of actually really annoyed me. I was at a golf tournament, which I don't even do anymore. So this was years ago. And I was put on like a scramble team, and it was an older gentleman. He was a doctor, and he was not the most pleasant man that I've ever golfed with, but he just walked up to me. I'd never met this guy before, and I'm Father Chad. And he just responds, "This is the golf course. I don't make you call me doctor, and I'm not going to call you Chad or I'm not going to call you Father." And I'm like, okay. So we did 18 holes that way, but I'm like, that's just, it felt very aggressive and rude.
Yeah.
And that one annoyed me. I didn't correct it. I called him whatever his first name was, and he called me by Chad, but there was no prior friendship. Yeah. I like, call me as you met me, unless if I say something different, or I even try and do that with some of like doctors. If I know them as parishioners, a lot of times I may know them by their first name, I call that. But if I've met them in the professional world first, I still refer to them as Dr. So-and-so or that. So I kind of do the same thing with other professions, I think, as well.
Every doctor I've ever met, I call Doc. I think that's the best. Doc. Thanks, Doc. See you, Doc. Something that always gets a laugh from the students when they see me in shorts and a t-shirt, like we're playing sand volleyball last night, and they're always startled. They're always startled. and they don't see it that often. But I just go, just call me Drew. Always gets a laugh from them. They never do it, but
one of the adjustments I think for all of us too, when you first get ordained, is starting to call the other priest by their first name, because you've always known them as Father Pat York, who preached my first mass as part of his homily, made me call him Pat. The seminarians always have, I've been in their lives pretty actively, and so I'll go get their first play and they'll say, thank you, Father Chad. I'm like, no, it's Chad now. You're a brother priest. And that always takes some adjustment on their part, took adjustment on my part, but it's kind of neat. There's a few that are exceptions. Like, I don't think I could ever call Father Monsignor Ivanek Ivan. Ivan. He's 90 some years old, and he's in a different stratosphere than I am. Yeah. So it will always be Father or Monsignor when talking to him.
Have I told you the story about Father Billinger at Mass? He once made an announcement at St. Elizabeth when I was a kid. He's like, you guys can call me Father Jim if you'd like, because everyone just called him Father Jim, Father Billinger. So yeah, he was just like, I don't, whatever you guys want to call me, that's fine, but I just have known everyone's calling me Father Billinger, and just, I'm okay with whatever. And we get back in the car and my mom turns around. She goes, "Don't you ever call him Father Dillinger." And I think it was just because of how much we admire Father Dillinger and things like that.
That's great.
But we had plenty of other priests. We called them by their first names and it wasn't a demeaning thing at all. It was just,
Yeah, I've never gone by Father Arnold. I mean, people will make reference, they'll introduce me that way, but I've never consistently gone by that.
Same.
Well, this podcast will probably drop sometime in August. I don't know exactly when in August because there's the little wrinkle of our live episodes of what that will look like, how many there will be, if it can be edited. So that really just throws a whole ripple into all of my planning. But sometime in August, this podcast will be going on, which means school is starting up or maybe school has already started. So I thought it'd be kind of a good idea to walk through a day in the life of seminary, just if anyone's wondering what that looks like. Now, from our collective experience, we've got about 5 different seminary experiences. We all went to Conception for college seminary. For theology, you finished up at Mundelein, Garrett, and Drew, you were at Kenrick in St. Louis. And I was at the Mount out in Maryland. And then I also am here at the House of Formation. So about 5 different experiences. Each of their day in the life, quote unquote, is going to be a little bit different, but it's going to be generally pretty similar things. So I thought we'd just kind of walk through and what that looked like. And for the most part, it starts early.
That's what I have right here. Early is what I have written up.
That was a huge adjustment from K-State to college seminary. I would not take a class if it began before 10 a.m. at K-State because I was not then, still am not by nature a morning person. Amen. I've gotten better at it, but still not great at it.
That was like how a couple of friends first found out I was going to seminary because I just dropped an 8 a.m. class that last semester because I was like, I don't want to get up for this anymore. Like, why'd you drop this class? Well, I'm going to seminary.
So here at the house, we start at 6:30 a.m. with morning prayer, followed by mass and then into breakfast. I think the Mount, I think we also started at 6:30 a.m. with mass. I don't remember at my time when we started at Conception. I think it was later. I think by your guys' time, it got going earlier.
6:45. 6:45 was
which
office.
Felt early.
Which ours was still later because we weren't doing office yet at that time.
But at Conception, I had a lot of time to pray the rest of the day, so I didn't feel like I got there right at 6:45. My experience at Kenrick was we would do, I think, maybe morning prayer at 7, actually, so it was later. But it was kind of like you needed to do your holy hour before that. And that wasn't a mandatory thing, but it was, it would have got lost the rest of the day. Yeah. So it was usually 6 when I would get in the chapel at KGS. And oh my gosh.
Yeah. At the Mount, we did the holy hour in the afternoon. Here at the House of Formation, we do an afternoon holy hour. What was at Mundelein?
Yeah, it was similar to Kenrick. I think maybe it was 7:15 morning prayer or whatever. But yeah, it was most guys would do their holy hour before that. That's what I would do. Yeah, just 6:15 to 7:15. And then it was maybe like once a week we'd have a communal holy hour in the afternoon. But I fell asleep almost every time just because it was like after a long day and everything, it's just right before dinner, just you're a little sleepy. So I always preferred just to do it early. I mean, Father Lainsworth always said that either you pray in the morning or you don't pray at all. So,
but you're an exception.
I've always disagree with that rule.
Yeah, I know.
As priests, that's a line we heard a lot in seminary. If you don't pray in the morning, you don't get your holy hour in. That's not true in my life. Yeah. And when I was first ordained, I tried to live that out. I tried to do the morning holy hour, and it was a snooze fest every time I went in. And so the Lord maybe gave me points for showing up, but I wasn't doing much else. And when I kind of became a pastor, I'm like, why am I doing this? This isn't working for me. And so I started carving out an early evening holy hour, and I could make that happen on a daily basis. And sometimes when that got missed, okay, maybe I wouldn't go over to the church until 9 p.m. But for me personally, that was much better prayer time in the evening or late afternoon or night than the morning holy hour. So to this day, I don't do a morning holy hour because most days, because it's not fruitful. Occasionally, I know what the day is going to be like. I'm like, if I don't get in for an hour now, it's not going to happen. And I am better in the morning than I used to be. But in general, I am a later in the day holy hour. Where do you guys fall in your priesthood with the holy hour?
Usually thing in the morning. But
first thing in the morning for me is a little different than first thing for you guys at college.
Yeah, what is first thing in the morning at WSU?
Always in the morning? Or
it's 8 a.m. It's adjacent to the 8 o'clock hour. But I almost always do it before my 11:45 mass. And my missionaries do it 10:45 to 11:45. So I kind of try to do it around that time a lot of times. So not first thing when I wake up. Usually I'll go see what the kids are doing and coffee and do a little business and walk on campus a little bit. But then late morning usually is for me.
Here at the house, we have our holy hour most days from 4 to 5 p.m. And we will see a mix of guys. There's a lot of guys, like I said, afternoon, sleepy time, falling asleep. We let them bring their coffee into the chapel. So they've got their cup of coffee. Sometimes that helps. That's sometimes it doesn't.
That was never a thing back
in the day. It wasn't in my time
and
either.
And it's a good thing. It is.
Supported by Fulton Sheen.
Yes. I always have coffee with me during my holy hour.
Yeah. And when they go on to theology, then they switch into most of the places of the early morning hour. And you'll see about half and half. There's half the guys that love doing it in the morning and will ask, even while they're in college, could we just do our holy hour in the morning? I'm like, it doesn't really work with our schedule. And then you'll see another group of guys that get to theology. I'm like, man, I miss the late afternoon holy hour. It is so hard to pray in the morning. So it can go either ways. But
you know, Garrett doesn't drink coffee
at all.
Not at all.
Are you Mormon?
That's psycho, right?
That is, I don't know if I'm appalled or if I respect that. I really don't know which way
exactly
I go on
what
that.
I'm going for.
I've seen him drink coffee once and he almost like killed a human being.
I almost killed him.
In a parking lot on the way to the March for Life.
There's video evidence. He should have been wearing a helmet as I pushed him around the cart and he shot out the front.
Shot out the front of a shopping cart in a parking lot in Pennsylvania or something.
Never had caffeine before. I was just so excited.
I didn't start drinking coffee till I was a priest. I made it through all of seminary It was finance council meetings in the afternoon forced me to start drinking coffee.
Mine was Camp Totus Tuus. I never drank it before. Yeah. And Camp Totus Tuus like was sucking every ounce of energy from me. And so.
Yeah, now I don't go a morning without it.
Yeah, amen.
So if you're at the seminary, plan for an early morning. 6:30 is pretty much somewhere between 6 and 7. You're starting up. Going to have some prayer. So we'll start with morning prayer. Usually prayed as a community. Ours is followed by Mass. Most places do a morning Mass. I mean, maybe one exception a week or so. And we're the same at the house. Wednesday morning prayer is on your own. Yeah. Mass is at noon. So you guys have at least a midway break to sleep if they need to catch up on sleep, which everyone is in a better mood Wednesday afternoon than they are in Tuesday afternoon. It's amazing what sleep does for a person's mood and prayer and charity.
Yeah.
So after morning prayer, after Mass, then it's class time and everyone's class schedule is going to be different. So here at the house, we have breakfast and then they go over to Newman sometime between 8 and 4. I don't even know what their schedule is because it doesn't really matter. It's like, this is your school time, go, and some guys will hang around. And that was how it was at the Mount, how it was at Conception, just depending on what your class, like any college schedule, it varies.
Yeah. Only other thing I was going to mention, it was consistent in my experience at seminary, always between breakfast and class was a time of coffee together with
I've got that, friends. Coffee and hang. Yeah. That's what we would always do.
It's one of my favorite moments here at the house is after Mass and guys are just kind of sitting around still waking up a little bit and the other cereal or making eggs and drinking coffee. And it is probably the most chill time of the entire day at that moment. No one's feeling rushed or anxious yet.
But then, it is just like a college schedule. And I think that's an important thing to hear. It's just you get your college schedule at KU and you get it at Conception or Newman. And it's just, hey, you need to be at class from 9 to 10:15, from 1 to 2:15, and from 3 to 3:50 or something like that. And otherwise, you're kind of free to do as you will the rest of the day. You just got to be at class. And so the rest of that kind of 8 to 4, 8 to 5 till dinner or holy hour in the afternoon, work out, go to class, homework, catch a nap if you need. All the things you would do on a college campus, actually, in that same time period.
Less latitude to miss class than in college campus. That gets noticed if you miss a class in seminary.
I never really thought about that, but I don't remember guys missing class in seminary, but it would be, there's only like 15 guys in the class, and so they know immediately. Yeah, there aren't classes you can just be like, I'll check the PowerPoint.
I knew of a guy, never to be repeated, should have never been able to happen in the first place, but he was in seminary, decided he wasn't continue, dropped out all of his classes, but did not tell the seminary or the diocese or the university. And so he would get up in the morning and have a backpack and just because the university, they were taking classes off campus. And so he would walk by the rector's office like he was going to class and he'd just go to coffee shop and hang out and play games and things like that. And it took them up until midterms to come out from the realize this guy has not been to a class since August. And not only did he leave seminary, he was promptly kicked out of seminary and it was a bad way to end things. So you can't do that.
Elijah Johnson
class. There you go. This guy was far less athletic. Less athletic.
But to use that time I think is huge. I mean, we said you can't, it's pretty tough to cut class, but you can easily do the reading or not do the reading. That's always a temptation. But I always went back to, it was Brother Anselm at Conception, and he just kind of sat us down at one point because it was pretty evident no one was doing the reading. He was just like, guys, you will never have the chance to read this stuff again. Mm-hmm. If you become a priest, your life's busy. If you discern out, you have a job, whatever. Like, you're never going to get the chance to just sit down and read Augustine like this or whatever it is we're reading. And that always stuck with me of like, yeah, like, I'm kind of just blowing this chance, not to get a grade in this class, but like, I'll never have this amount of time to read this kind of stuff. So I might as well use it.
So here at the House of Formation, classes will run up until about 4 o'clock. And then we do a holy hour. We do a communal holy hour again, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday at 4 o'clock. The mount was similar. We always had an afternoon holy hour. It was optional. Most of the guys went to it from 4 to 5 p.m. With evening prayer in there. What time would be evening prayer at Mundelein or Kenrick? Because you did that in community.
Maybe 5:30 or 5:45. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dinner than usually to follow
dinner there. Yeah. And same with us. So we have dinner right after. It's always a good debate of food, good or bad. I think at conception, when we were there, I don't know about your guys' experience. When I was there, the food was terrible. Some of the worst institutional food I think I've ever had in my life. The monk in charge of it at the time was a vegan, which I don't know why he was in charge of the kitchen. And it was, I ate so much salad just because it was the food I recognized, and peanut butter sandwiches. So much.
It wasn't terrible.
Yeah. When
it was probably the worst of the seminaries.
Yeah, Kenrick had very good food. I really enjoyed it. The sisters from India cooked for us at Kenrick. It was good food. Conception was fine. It was fine.
Unmemorable, I guess. Yeah, I don't remember.
Fine would have been an upgrade.
Yeah, I think us. It was.
We were not at the fine level yet.
I remember was Thursday was biscuits and gravy.
Yeah,
so that was like
B&G.
A big day.
Yeah,
the rest of the breakfasts were just fine. I just had cereal usually, but it was like Thursday. Everybody went to breakfast.
That's right,
because it was B's and G's day.
One day at Conception, I don't know if you remember this. They served Mexican chili, ooh, and it was it didn't go well. And it was like a movie. Guys piling into the bathroom, lined up, like crawling over each other. They had to like cancel classes the next morning and things like that. It was so
bodies strewn throughout the hallways.
It was like a movie. There's a story from Kenrick before my time, so I didn't hear this, but a deacon whose homily was, it's not the food, it's you, and you'll be a miserable priest. And the point was, and maybe it was at Kenrick, maybe it was at the Mount, I don't know. But the point was like complaining about the food. It's not really the food. Something's going on in your heart and you got to get that figured out. But like sometimes it is the food.
Sometimes it is the food.
That guy sounded a little miserable. Whoever said that.
We eat really well here at the house. We're kind of unique in that we do all our own cooking. So everyone's on a cooking team and you work with others. And so it kind of gets a little bit of a machismo competition, is you don't want to be the guy that makes the bad meal. In 5 years, we've only ever had 2 unedible meals, and so which is an amazing record, yeah. I think. It's only 2 times it's been blown so bad, we're like, we can't eat this. We're going to the refrigerator for leftovers. But yeah, generally, we eat very well. In fact, as an adult without the metabolism of a college student, it's hard to keep the LBs off. Everything's butter and cheese and cream cheese, but it's tasty.
But those are huge times. I mean, just building community of meals together to break bread together and... I remember we had to, at Conception at some points, they instituted the art of conversation.
Oh, man.
So that was painful because some of the guys maybe didn't quite have the social skills and be taught and mature in that. But those was painful. It was like, we're going to talk about our traveling dreams tonight. And it was just really robotic and not fun.
And they
When it's not that, it's usually a ton of fun.
You could only have 2 guys from your diocese and 2 guys from your class at the same table. To keep all the Wichita bros from eating together. That's honestly what it was for, because Wichita was just eating together all the time. Hey, you guys need to branch out a little bit.
When I was at Conception, Father Samuel had a bell, and so dinner wasn't over until he rang the bell, and so it would just get quiet in the room as anticipating, like trying to encourage him to ring the bell so we could get up from table. We're more laid back at the House of Formation. We have an end of meal grace. But you're right, that's the family time, and just like a family is enriched by eating together, iron sharpens iron, man sharpens fellow iron. And that's one of the primary places, is just hanging out and appreciate one another during meals. Into the evening after dinner. So we've got early morning prayer, followed by class, followed by evening prayer, holy hour somewhere in that mix, followed by a communal dinner. And then evenings are largely on your own. And you're always going to have different things to fill in. So all the seminary is going to have community work. They call them apostolics, or what are some other, they call them different things. But work that you're doing, volunteer work, couple hours a week. You're going to have meetings with your spiritual director, and those are going to be thrown every 2 weeks in throughout the day. Meeting with a formation advisor, which are thrown in throughout the day. That may be a podcast in the future, just talking about roles of spiritual director and formation advisors and how those differ. And then you've got homework, free time. We played a lot of Ultimate Frisbee. Still, we play a lot of Ultimate Frisbee here at the house, ping pong, movies on, and things like that. That's kind of what, I don't know if anything else typically goes on in an evening.
No, kind of diocesan time every once in a while, like though maybe a night of the week that the diocese that you're a part of all gets together. And so maybe Thursday nights would be a night for the whole, all of the Wichita guys to get together and go get a meal or have dinner together, things like that. Or for your Yezu group, like a small group that you're meeting with, might have a night of the week that you all meet together, something like that. But that's about it. It's similar to a college campus in some ways. Mm-hmm. Obviously wildly different in some other ways, but it's not all that crazy.
Right, right. It's more structured than your college campus life because, again, we're trying to make sure we get prayer, time, get time for growth. An intentional fraternity and community building is always going to be an aspect of it. And sometimes those can feel like obligations, but quite frankly, they're necessary. You got to be intentional about those things to grow. And so a seminary, in essence, I suppose you could put it that way, is a very intentional community aimed at growth in intellect, in growth in humanity, in growth in spirituality, and in service to others. Anything else we should throw in about seminary life in general or a day in the life of seminary?
One thing I just thought of as you were saying that in order to create that intentionality, especially in college, is you're kind of mandated. I don't know how you guys word it here to be present other than maybe an off-campus weekend once a month or whatever. Whereas in theology, you have quite a bit more leeway on that because you trust the guys more and you're trying to build up maybe more some priestly skills. But so what's that like at the house? So they've kind of got to be here unless they ask you how much of the time?
We kind of tell the guys at the beginning of the year, imagine you're living on an island. So even though you're still in Wichita and you've got a lot of friends and things right there, you shouldn't be going out to them. And it's not because we don't trust you. It's not because those are bad people, but because we have to be intentional about what we're doing. And so you have to draw a little bit of a line and step away from that. So in the house, the expectation is if you're doing anything beyond community here or Newman, beyond just, you know, running a 30-minute errand or something, you should consult the priest and ask permission. Again, it feels like, oh, I'm 19, why should I ask permission? Well, it's to make sure that you are being intentional about the time here. And so things like, it's my dad's birthday, can I go back for dinner? Of course, that's a great thing to go back. But, oh, I've got a friend that's going to be in town and I want to go hang out. No, you got to let that ball go by.
Mm-hmm. I know something similar with Spanish summer. So this summer we've had seminarians studying Spanish here at the House of Formation. And I know Peter shared with me that one of the images you gave is, would you do this thing if you were in Mexico? If you're studying Spanish in Mexico, would this be something you'd come home for? Or if you were in Pittsburgh that you drive the 3 hours for? And I know that's been really helpful for him. And like, I was hoping to hang with Pete a lot this summer. I haven't barely seen him this summer. I can count on one hand how many times I've seen him, which is a good thing. It needs, that structure was necessary and they've appreciated that, I know, or else this thing can go off the rails real quick.
And it's not like we're the Gestapo keeping an eye out for it. And you will see there are guys that are better at this and guys that are worse at it. But I can testify, generally, the guys that do this better get more out of their experience. Agreed. So there are guys that anytime no one's looking, seems like they slip off or the vaguest excuse. Well, I had to do this errand and I was right by my folks' house, so I stopped by to grab this or that. The more exceptions and the wider they cast that net, the less they get out of the experience. Whereas guys that really take that to heart and try and invest themselves in the community and don't go off the rails without asking for it are the guys that gain the most and grow the most, which is the goal of why we're here. So there are reasons we do that, but that is a reality that's sometimes an adjustment at the college level for guys. Well, I think we'll call it a day there. Thanks for listening to About 4 o'clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today, and it comes from St. John Paul II. He says, "There is no place for selfishness and no place for fear. Do not be afraid when love makes demands. Do not be afraid when love requires sacrifice." See you next week.